Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This is Skincare with Friends.
Hello and welcome to Skincare with Friends with me. You're right.
I just wanted to shout, finally.
Yeah, we've been fiddling around with our audio for like an hour.
We're in really bad moods now.
Yeah.
I'm really grumpy and I've run out of alcohol.
Oh, no, that's no good. Can't have that.
Oh, I just found a tiny little liqueur thing of Edinburgh gin. I wonder what this is going to taste like.
You go and get that. Hello and welcome to Skincare with Friends. My name is Nia Patton. I am an internet skincare expert with a postgraduate diploma in cosmetic medicine. I'm an esthetician and I present this podcast, Skincare with Friends, from my lovely friend Natalie, who's gone to get a drink. God bless her. And today we are talking again about ultraviolet A protection, which we talked about last time. Natalie's come back with a lovely pink drink.
It could be gross. And that's the first time you've actually professionally introduced yourself.
Yeah.
You need to do that from now on.
I think
on.
I should do that every time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Natalie is not professionally a skincare expert, but she is becoming a skincare businesswoman.
Oh, one day.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I just veer between you can't do this and you shall do this.
Why not try, though?
And I'm having a you can't do this day to day. I don't know why.
No.
It's mad, isn't it? Oh, because there's so much. I just want a little online skincare shop that has a little advicey bit, sells really a really small collection of things that I really like and have tried. And yeah, that's it really. But it's difficult to do with a full-time job at the same time.
It is. So, yeah, something like that requires an awful lot of work.
Yeah.
It does.
Yes. So that's what's happening.
But if it's something you really want to do, it's worth trying, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
And it's fun to create your own website and make it nice.
Well, I'm having a massive piece. I'm having huge help there.
Yeah.
By a lovely lady called Liz Mosley, who's a branding expert as well. So anyone wants to start their own business, she really is good. And she's got a Building Your Brand podcast, actually. I should hype her because she is really great.
Oh, let's listen to that.
And, do you know what? I listen to her. She's brilliant. She's really, really good. And just on the subject of her, so she's been on Instagram for like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years as a business. Mm. And she's got like 7,000 or 8,000 followers. She has that in like 3 weeks on TikTok. And because she made one video that went viral, just one, but it's poured so much now into her. I mean, I don't know how that translates into coin, but I obviously think that, you know, she's making really good content as well. If you are on TikTok, check out Liz Mosley, Mosley. Yeah, she's really good. So engaging.
Okay, cool. I will look at that.
Yeah.
You're on TikTok now, aren't you?
Yeah, I made one video.
I don't want to point at anything though. Can I just knock down some
points? You don't have to point at things. You don't have to dance, and you don't have to play the same songs that everyone else is playing to get those views. And you don't have to lip sync to stupid shit that other people say.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do any of those things.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe I'll do that.
It's really short videos, and you can either do 15-second ones or minute ones, and they're really good. I think bite-sized lessons is such a good idea, especially in skincare. So say if you're going to have TikTok, what I would love to do is an A to Z. A is four.
Okay.
And then you do vitamin A, or you do adapalene or whatever, and you just, but I just think that's so engaging.
It is engaging, but I'm not very good at stuff like that. I'm much more of a long form person who goes into immense detail for hours.
So I'll take your long form immense detail research.
And go, bonkers. Hey, as far as the lake goes, let's give the spots.
Yeah. I'll do the fun, like, weather girl presenting bit where I point and dance, and I won't do either of those things. And this is what I was talking to Liz about that, actually, because she was like, I said, I just don't want to lip sync. I look like a real tit. And she went, yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to do that. So it's fine. And no, anyway, that's me.
Nobody can make you lip sync.
Nobody can force you to lip sync. It's the equivalent to me of people making you come up and do karaoke with them and you just want to kill them.
Yeah, I quite like doing karaoke.
Oh, do you? No, I'm not. Although I did blast The Winner Takes It All at my ex-stepmother's birthday party the other week. And a very, very freshly divorced divorcee burst into tears and left the room.
Oh, that's not funny at all, poor woman.
And Jane went, it's okay, carry on.
Carry on, upsetting people.
It's the most heartfelt heartbreak song you could imagine, I think, The Winner Takes It All. It's so sad because it's got such an amazing disco beat, but the lyrics are just so tragic. I'm really sorry to that.
And you really spoke to her heart and she started crying.
But then she cried for the rest of the night and just really got on everyone's tits. So, you've got to...
Yeah, she was going to cry. Whatever happened.
I wasn't, like, singing at her. Going, your husband took it all. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
you're all alone from now.
If it's any, did I tell you this? If it's any comfort, he's one of the richest men in the UK and she's doing fine out of the divorce.
Oh, yeah.
Not as well as she wanted, but it's a few million.
But so she's actually doing rather well.
You could buy ABBA's back catalogue. She'll be fine. Let's just not worry about it. We're doing part two.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is UVA protection. Is this the most researched podcast you've done so far?
I don't think so.
It's got the most bloody graphs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, like vitamin C was rather well researched.
That was extremely well researched. Was that a two-part or three?
I think it was like four.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. Yeah. So where did we leave off last time then, Nee?
So let's recap.
Okay.
So basically what we said, like, I re-listened to the episode and it was very pleasant to do so, actually. I was like, oh, yeah, this is quite entertaining.
Do you actually find yourself laughing at
us? Yeah, I do. Us. I laugh at myself laughing.
Which is lovely. Okay.
It's a bit weird.
So recap, UVA is bad.
UVA is bad. Mm-hmm. It causes skin aging and pigmentation and likely it also causes cancer.
Okay.
And it's... compared with UVB, it's more ubiquitous.
Love
that was the best word.
It's lovely.
I know. Yeah. It's all around us. You know, it goes through clouds and it goes through windows. It's there in the morning and the evening as well. So it's something we have to think about when we're going outside or in just existing, really.
It's a bit like heartbreak then, isn't it? You know, it just follows you everywhere, passes through windows and clouds.
You can't hide.
It's there in the morning.
It may even come from the moon.
Oh
no, it doesn't. that's a reference to our podcast episode, Skincare with Lols. Yeah.
That was crazy. That was a crazy question.
It's funny.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we've got the difficulty of the way sunscreens label their UVA protection varies from country to country.
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty in choosing a UVA protection.
Okay.
Is that figuring out how much UVA protection you're getting from your product. And there's a few different ways of trying to assess a product's ability to protect from UVA.
Okay.
And so I was going to try and skip over it a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but.
But you have written in your notes, and this is really interesting. Well, it is interesting when you go through the, you know, exact science and how bloody difficult it is to actually formulate a really good sunscreen. That, you know, we need to kind of start treating it with the respect it deserves, really. I've been watching a lot of videos about people asking questions about mixing sunscreens, mixing with their foundations, yeah, mixing freshly with other sunscreens. I do actually top up with other sunscreens.
Using them, not mixing them together, like in your hand.
No. But I mean, you know, I'll put one on in the morning and I'll reapply with another, for example.
Yes. Yeah. And did you hear anything negative about doing that?
Not about doing that. I think it was basically, because personally, I do use two separate sunscreens on my face. Mm. So I would use a mineral one on my forehead where it doesn't sweat into the eyes. And then I would use mixed filters, if a fine, but a pure chemical one does tend to sting. Actually, that's not true because Altruist is mixed filters, isn't it?
But it's got a lot of chemical filters in it.
It does have a lot of chemical filters. So that doesn't tend to go near my forehead. So I do tend to, that's not mixing. That's just putting two separate ones on different parts of your face. Yeah. I didn't see any issue about that, but there's loads about people asking whether they can obviously mix with other products like your foundations, but you're clearly diluting. Mm. So no is the answer.
No, you mustn't do that because the sunscreen's designed to form a film. Mm-hmm. And if you mix it with something else, it's not going to form a film. Yeah. Like, you need it to stay in a smooth layer over your face.
Yeah.
If you're mixing it with something else, then you're just going to destroy everything that the sunscreen manufacturer has designed.
And we'll go into why this must be left alone, because clearly formulating it is no mean feat, is it?
Yes, no, it isn't. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing to do. And one thing that I wanted to say before we start talking about sunscreen is that we need American people to review our podcast favorably, please.
Okay.
I've been looking, and our rating in the UK is good. And I'm appealing to any American listeners to please write a nice review for us on Apple Podcasts, because we've got a rating of 3.8 because of those people. There was one person who took exception to something negative we said about Donald Trump. And it's brought our score down. Another person complained about our audio, which, I agree. Sometimes in the olden days, our audio was really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And we apologize. We need to bump up our score.
Hype us up. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. If somebody could do that, that'd be really great.
Okay.
So, yeah. And moving on from my plea, we're going to talk initially about critical wavelengths.
Okay.
So, this is the system that's used in America. So, basically, the critical wavelength is defined as the wavelength at which 90% of the formula's UV absorbance occurs. Mm-hmm. Sunscreen products and individual filters have their own absorbance from the range of 290 to 400 nanometers. Mm-hmm. So if you have a look at, I think I mentioned it in the last episode. So basically there's a graph and it's sort of, it's about where the absorption is across the spectrum.
Okay.
So the sunscreen graph should look quite straight across, ideally. So that means it's protecting you across all of the wavelengths.
Okay.
A critical wavelength of 370 is what the Americans use as a sort of label to say this is broad spectrum.
Okay.
The critical wavelength is 370 because 370 is quite far along the spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's a problem with that in that it doesn't necessarily mean that there's great protection across the entire spectrum.
Okay.
It's not that sensitive. And there's issues with it, really.
Okay.
And the other ways of assessing sunscreen, so UVA protection factor and PPD protection factor, which are pretty similar measures. So the UVA PF is a sort of a similar measure to SPF.
Okay.
So it's just about how much ultraviolet A the sunscreen lets through onto your skin.
Okay.
Basically, UVA PF is assessed in a laboratory using a machine.
Okay.
Whereas PPDPF is assessed on human beings.
Right.
So essentially they shine some UVA light at somebody's skin and see how much it tans, mm-hmm. and compare unprotected skin with protected skin.
Okay. So of course you need a human to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So PPD means persistent pigment darkening.
That's it. Yeah.
Protection factor. Right. Okay. So if your skin is, that's going to be of particular interest to you, but not, so not all sunscreens would show a PPD rating, right? I mean, like, I know that Altruist does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Does Altruist show it?
Does, yeah.
The very few then? Is it quite few?
Yes. Yeah. And we'll get on to that, but it's mainly sort of European sunscreens that display their specific PPD rating.
Okay.
PPD-PF is quite useful for people who suffer from melasma because it's about pigmentation.
Mm-hmm.
But it only assesses tanning.
Yeah.
You know, how well it protects against tanning. Mm-hmm. And the UVA spectrum isn't just about tanning. So, you know, certain wavelengths will cause tanning, mm-hmm. and then the longer wavelengths still damage your skin but don't cause tanning. So it's not, that's not a very accurate measure either.
Sure.
Because it's just measuring one thing.
Okay.
So longer wavelength UVA rays don't produce a skin response that can be observed, but they still cause aging.
Okay.
So PPDPF is the measure that's used by Asian countries. And you'll see those PA++++
mm-hmm.
on your Asian sunscreens.
Yep.
+++++. So the most pluses you can get is only a PPD of 16, which isn't actually that high.
Right. Because isn't Altruist something bonkersly high?
54.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would have a PA of +++++, but it's way higher than 16.
Sure.
So you don't get a true measure of how good the sunscreen is protecting you, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we have a look at different countries and the way they label these SPFs.
Okay.
Europe and several other countries follow Europe in their methods. So mm-hmm. Europe, New Zealand, so it's the EU and Britain, because we're not in the EU anymore.
Stop, don't mention it. It's just too upsetting.
I know, brutal. Just disappointed in my own country in general.
You can't talk about anything to do with politics. You'll get a bad
I'll get down
podcast ratings.
annoying.
Okay.
Yeah. So New Zealand follows the European method. Mm-hmm. Some of the Middle East Arabic countries, Turkey and the ASEAN countries, mm-hmm. Brunei, Myanmar, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam follow these regulations, which I will list. Sunscreens are considered cosmetic products. So the way that different countries sort of categorize sunscreens makes a big difference to the way that companies can get them to market. Because
mm-hmm.
in America, they're classed as drugs. So, so that's a big, you know, there's a lot more legislation and rigmarole around it. And I think in Australia, it's more complicated as well. So, they're considered, in the EU, they're considered to be cosmetic products. So that makes something simpler.
Okay.
Yeah. SPF 6 is the lowest SPF is allowed to display. So the UVA protection factor must be a third of the sun protection factor.
Okay.
So there's a ratio between the UVA protection and the UVB protection.
Okay.
And the critical wavelength must be at least 370.
Okay.
And then if the product complies with both of those things, then it gets a UVA in a circle logo.
Okay.
Yeah. So certain claims are banned in the EU, such as sunblock, total protection, all day protection,
mm-hmm.
because that implies that they protect against all UV radiations. There's no need to reapply, la, la, la. It sort of, you know, it gives a consumer a false sense of security. So that certain terms are banned so that you don't start believing that you only put something on once and it's there all day.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sunblock is banned. Don't miss that.
Yeah.
Which is great. And like you said, there should be instructions for use because obviously we can't say that you aren't able to or it's not necessary to reapply when it clearly is.
Yeah. 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 And that's what I was going to say. I was looking at this number 7 sunscreen reviews to see what it's like, because I would like to try number, you know, something that's easily available with a high PPD is a good find. So yeah, lots of the reviews are great. And then reviews was like, oh, I noticed that I have to reapply every 2 hours. What a waste of money. That's ridiculous. Like some woman bitterly complaining about having to reapply. Like, okay. Yeah.
Sorry to disappoint you, Maureen, yeah, but you do.
Sunscreen, no, no sunscreen lasts all day. That's not a thing.
Although I need to be a bit more careful about my, because I'm using just Korean sunscreens at the moment and I am definitely tanning.
At the moment. Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, it's really, so the PPD would, you know, a higher PPD or, you know, showing a rating that's a little bit more sort of precise would be preferable, I think.
Yeah,
this is crazy. So, because we're in Wales, obviously, as most of our listeners will know, and it's quite deceptive, isn't it? Our weather. So it's pretty warm. Like if you're running outside, you know, it's shorts and t-shirts, even though it's really quite overcast and cloudy.
Yeah,
and I'm getting a lot of color on my body from running. You know, so yeah.
But it's not that hot. You're not staying still. You're not sunbathing. You don't really think about it, do you?
Absolutely not. But yeah, so that would be really good. Okay, so I'll read this bit out from the Journal of European Union Commission recommendation of 22nd of September 2006. So this is what we are saying in the EU, which now doesn't include us. Sunscreen sunscreen products should sufficiently be effective against UVB and UVA radiation to ensure a high protection of public health. To this end, a sunscreen product should provide a minimum UVB and UVA protection. An increased sun protection factor, i.e. mainly UVB protection, should include an increase in the UVA protection as well. Therefore, the protection against UVA and B radiation should be related. Scientific findings show that certain biological damage to the skin can be prevented and reduced if the ratio of the protection factor measured in the persistent pigment darkening test, i.e. addressing mainly UVA radiation, is at least 1/3 of the factor measured by the sun protector factor testing method, i.e. addressing mainly UVB radiation, which you've just talked about. Moreover, in order to ensure a broad protection, dermatologists recommend a critical wavelength of at least 370 nanometers. Yeah, so that's pretty strict there.
Yeah.
I like what they've said. And that's what we've been living by for almost the last 20 years.
Yeah. So you can kind of, you can trust the European sunscreen that, you know, they're making sure that by nature, the thing is protective against UVA.
And there's a ratio.
Yeah. So the next UVA evaluation system is the Boots Star system, which you might have seen. If you're British, I guess it's not so famous anywhere else. We've got one of our main sort of drug stores called Boots. They have this Star system, and it's different to any other UVA labeling, really.
Okay.
So the Boots Star system describes the ratio of the UVA to the UVB absorption of a sunscreen. It's tested in a laboratory. So the test compares the ratio of UVA to UVB before and after exposure.
Okay.
So it tests the sunscreen's photostability.
Okay.
As well as the ratio.
And that's really important, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it gives a much better measure of that article, that excerpt from the European Journal you just read out. It just, mm-hmm. you know, they just described it needs to be a third of the protection. The Boot mm-hmm. Star system says it needs to be a good ratio mm-hmm. after exposure to sunlight as well, mm-hmm. which is correct. So this this was devised by Brian Diffie, who we spoke mm-hmm. about last time, who is, you know, Mr. Sunscreen. This is, you know, the best system he could devise mm-hmm. for assessing UVA protection. So it's a good system. If you've got 5 stars, you can feel pretty happy that you've got good protection and it's going to be photo stable. So it's going to still protect you after you've been wearing it for an hour or so.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's yeah. super important. Thanks, Brian. Yeah.
Cheers, Bri.
Thank you. Yep. Cheers, Bri. So we're going to go to the USA now, where it's very different. Because here, sunscreen is categorized as an over-the-counter drug and is regulated by the FDA, which is the Food and Drug Administration. Mm. And because it's treated as a drug, the FDA requires way more stringent testing on SPF ingredients, meaning that newer SPF ingredients that are available in Europe are not available in the US, such as Tinazop. So you would think that more stringent testing means they only let the best of the best in, and really the opposite is true, because the testing is so slow and there are so many different bureaucratic processes to go through that it's not at all effective. So regarding UVA protection, a sunscreen must have a critical wavelength of 370 nanometers to be able to display the words broad spectrum. Yeah. Having a particular ratio between the UVA and UVB isn't a requirement in the US. That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So there's no number that you get. There's no stars. Ooh. There's no pluses. It just says you've got to have a critical wavelength of 370 and then it's broad spectrum and that's it. You don't get any...
Wow.
Like, there's no nuance from one sunscreen to the other, just broad spectrum, and that's it. That's all you're getting. That's all the information you're allowed in America.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So most of the products on the American market meet with the US standards for UVA protection, but nearly half of those do not meet the European standards.
Yeah.
Says Wang in 2017.
Yeah, Wang 2017.
That's incredible.
Yeah. You know, this study by Wang, they checked several sunscreens, saw what the ratio was and la la la, assessed them all. And yeah, lots of American sunscreens wouldn't pass in Europe. We wouldn't be able to call them broad spectrum.
Do you use any Americans? Have you ordered any American sunscreens?
No, I don't think I have ever. No, actually, no, I do. I was sent one recently by a company called Banish.
Okay.
And it's really nice. It's just, it's a mineral sunscreen. Okay. SPF 50, and it's very wearable. It's not white, it's not uncomfortable, it's not heavy, but it's from America. So I'm a bit like, I wouldn't want to trust it on a sunny day, but it's a good sunscreen. Banish, that was the brand I just said.
And I'm using one by Dermatology, which is...
Yes.
A mix filters SPF 46 and obviously calls itself a broad spectrum as well. But like you said, and in fact, I've seen some of the feedback, but clearly from European consumers saying, like, we don't, what does this mean? What does your broad spectrum mean? Which, you know, it's not fair on Dermatology. They don't make the rules. But obviously you don't get that additional information, which has given me pause a little bit because, I have been wearing it quite a lot.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Yeah. You might be like, I like that sunscreen, but...
Oh, it's lovely. It's so nice. But actually, that's my going out sunscreen, I would say. Not my, you know, knock around the house or go for a run sunscreen. It's far too nice, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a shame.
Sadly.
So, yes, the critical wavelength that the FDA are asking for of 370 doesn't take into account, is not ensuring high strength UVA protection.
Yeah.
And then Nia has included these really cool graphs.
Yes.
Which you're going to put on your blog, I guess.
I'll put on the skincarewithfriends.com blog so you can see these graphs that we keep banging on about. But it just shows like the the difference in the level of protection you're getting across the spectrum on from two different sunscreens with the same broad spectrum labeling, and it's quite different. You know, you don't get the same, you don't get the same protection, and you don't know what you're getting either, because there's no information. Right. But yeah, there's a, you know, there's a lot of newer UVA centric filters that they can't use in America.
Like, and not just that, you've included here, but they're even going backwards. Moving to ban the octinoxate and the, which other one?
Oxabenzone.
Is that because of all of the reef safe hype?
No, it's not. It's because of there was this study that it was about sort of, do sunscreens absorb into the human body and do they have any kind of effect? So they did this study, and basically they slathered human beings in the recommended amount of sunscreen. So like a shot glass full of sunscreen, and they reapplied it every 2 hours.
Okay.
So they used a shit ton of sunscreen and then tested the people's blood, and some of the oxybenzone and octinoxate had got into the human bloodstream. Mm-hmm. There were measurable levels of it, and they sort of decided that this is potentially a worry because of hormone disruption. But, you know, no human being ever does that, ever, do they? You know, not even on holiday do you use a full shot glass of sunscreen every 2 hours. No man does.
No.
So America's treating sunscreen like a drug. And it sounds like the FDA is working on a new document, and they might say that they're going to strike off some of the sunscreens that were on the list before, not include more, because there's not enough studies on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a real shame. So Nadeem Shaath, who is a chemist who heads the Alpha Research and Development cosmetics consulting firm, says that if we don't have a change of fundamental mindset at the FDA, I'm afraid that no new UV filters will ever be introduced into the US unless through the lengthy, tedious, expensive and severely restricted new drug application process. Which was a study written by Reich in 2015.
Yeah.
So your sum up from this is that you would consider buying sunscreens from somewhere else. It's had a huge effect, really, on a lot of American brands then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's unfair, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely. So what are they doing? How is Canada different then from the US?
So Canada, they use the same labeling as America. So the critical wavelength has to be 370 to demonstrate broad spectrum on their labels.
Okay.
But they don't have the ingredient restrictions. So they can have tinazorb and meroxyl and ecamsul. They're all allowed in Canada.
They still don't have the same UVA to B ratio.
Nope, they don't have the ratio.
Yeah. So again, broad spectrum is quite not a loose term, but you know what I mean? It's not.
But
not
if measurable. You know, we know that if sunscreens have a good percentage of tinazorb, then there will be broad, you know, there'll be a great protection from the product. So having these ingredients in sunscreens makes an enormous effect and makes them a lot safer. And tinazorb is photostable as well. It's a great ingredient. Yeah. So, you know, look for that when you're choosing a sunscreen.
Okay.
Because it's good. In China, Korea and Japan, they just, as we said, they have the PA plus whatever rating. So it's just about the PPD. So PPD 2-4 gets a PA of plus, 4-8 plus, 8-16 plus, 16 plus, 4 pluses, and that's that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not like as stringent as Europe.
It's not as stringent, and I'm actually quite surprised, because in a lot, especially in Korea and Japan, a lot of, especially women, are very anti having, tanning.
Yeah.
Tanning especially. So it's not just about the UVA protection. It's purely, it is the, you know, the PPD as well. So yeah. It kind of surprises me that the PA level is so low. To have a PA of 4+ is
not such a big low deal. PPD. Yeah.
Yeah. That is quite surprising.
Yeah.
Because now I always thought that PA 4+ was like brilliant.
Mega. Yeah. It's okay.
Clearly.
Yeah. In Australia, sunscreens with SPF above 15 are regulated by the TGA as therapeutic products, and they have to go through rigorous testing. To demonstrate broad spectrum on the labeling, they must pass both the critical wavelength of 370 or greater and have a UVA PF to SPF ratio of greater than a third. So, yeah, similar to Europe, but I think,
yes.
I think they're more stringent. There's more testing involved for Australian sunscreens to make sure.
Yes, interesting, class, it's therapeutic. Products. Yeah. It's quite, I guess that's like six. Yeah.
But in Australia, you know, there's so much risk from the sun because they're under a hole in the ozone.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot more skin cancer. So they have to be more careful.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is the sort of sum up of how countries take UVA protection.
And, you know, you've said, sorry to sound vain and shallow, but it really is the UVA that is making us look aged.
Yeah, it's making us old and it's making us brown. So I don't want it. Thanks. Yeah, it is important. It's like the most, if you're, you know, you're spending a lot of time thinking about aging, pigmentation, what ingredients work for pigmentation, what, you know, peptides, I need something with peptides in it, la la la, but like protecting against UVA is the best thing you can do for your skin appearance long term.
Yeah,
it's much better than peptides and vitamin C, and it's got a lot more proof behind it. It is the ultimate anti-aging skincare. Yeah, it does become quite important. So choosing a sunscreen that is well assessed and
you say protective. Here that for you it's definitely mixed chemical and physical filters is the best option.
Yeah,
so a good product with UVA blocking chemical filters like Tinosorb or Moroxyl work well to protect across the spectrum. I'd never heard of Moroxyl.
Yeah, it's just another one of the newer filters. Like in the ingredients list, Tinosorb and Moroxyl and Ecamsul probably have like long chemical names. So it'll help to put it in like one of those product analyzing websites.
Yeah.
Inky Decoder. Yeah, that's quite handy. COSDNA.
Yeah. And also you've noted here in bold, so I know it's important. An SPF that only has mineral filters won't give complete protection in the long wavelength UVA spectrum. So that's important to note as well, because I think there's a little bit of sort of crossed wires with people only wanting to select mineral
filters. It's more sort of natural or better for your skin,
but you're not going to be protecting against the long wavelength UVA spectrum. So several filters together work to stabilize each other and create a more photo stable product. So
that's
mixed is great, and a few And yeah, you said try and get your hands on a non-American sunscreen if you can.
Sorry, America. That's a bit annoying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you're meant to put 2 fingers length of cream on every day. It's a lot. It's a lot of cream.
I don't know. I think I've got a big face. I definitely have a big forehead. I put sort of that seems fine to me.
Yeah.
2 fingers and then 1 for the neck.
Yeah, I do. You know, I do it now and I'm like, oh, it looks like a lot. And then it does soak in though. Ooh. It does like sit down and.
Yeah, for sure.
It's okay.
So,
yeah.
You've then listed some high PPD SPF products.
Yes.
Because both of us, we have some form of hyperpigmentation. You have melasma. I don't know what I have.
I do. I think it's melasma.
Yeah, I just thought melasma seemed to be more hormonal, whereas mine didn't really trigger around pregnancy or anything like that. It just hit me on my 30th birthday, pretty much. So I don't know.
I think melasma is just defined as symmetrical.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was just more hormonal, whereas, you know, non-specific hyperpigmentation was just sun damage. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll find the definition.
So there is good evidence that SPF can help with reducing melasma. And in theory, the higher the PPD PF, the better the protection will be against pigmentation. You cited another study by Lakhdar et al. In 2007 on the effect of high PPD SPF on the occurrence of melasma in a group of pregnant women. They used a sunscreen with a PPD of 28 to good effect. So basically,
yes.
Also, what you've read is that the higher the concentration of SPF filters, the stickier the product is going to be, right?
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
What I was trying to say, so the study about the pregnant women, so they used a PPD SPF of 28. So I was like, well, that worked for the pregnant women. They didn't get pigmentation while they were pregnant. So you kind of want to aim for a UVA protection of 28 plus, because that's what the scientists did. So that's kind of where I'd want to sort of start thinking about my protection. So, you know, Asian sunscreens will not tell you if you're getting a UVA PF of 28. You just get 16. So if you've got more SPF filters, it's going to be sticky, but you want a higher UVA PF. So you kind of got to somehow find a balance of PPD PF to stickiness.
Yeah.
You know, you could get a really, really high PPD PF, but the product's going to be sticky AF.
An altruist isn't, is it?
It's not sticky.
No. And that's...
It's not sticky, but it does pill.
Oh, right. It does it? Okay. I wouldn't know.
Under makeup. Yeah. If I tried to put makeup on it, the makeup would start balling up and rolling around on my face in little black balls.
So what are you using that has a high PPD then that's not altruist?
Yeah, it's just altruist, really. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going outside seriously and being outside for a while, then I'll use altruist.
Okay.
I also use the ultraviolet sunscreens.
Mm. Are they nice? They look lovely.
They're so nice. They're so comfortable, easy to apply.
Are they Australian ultraviolet?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's Australian. So, you know, you don't get a PPD measurement from them.
No.
I tried to search and there's nothing on the website.
You do get the knowledge that they've had super stringent checks, and you know that they're...
Yes, there's the good ratio, the stringent checks, so Braille, but it's quite expensive. So it's not something I want to slap on with gay abandon.
Yeah,
so trying to find a sunscreen with high PPD is a challenge because quite a lot of them are sticky and pill. Because that's what it's like when you've got lots of SPF ingredients.
Okay.
You'll get some sticky pilling. Mm. Yeah. And you know, lots of the reviews of these high PPD products are not, they're a bit like guarded. Like, it's okay if you put a bit of powder on.
Right. Okay.
It's generally the word. So I've got a little list of high PPD brands to look for. Mm-hmm. So Altruist Face Fluid is my personal favorite. But yeah, both of the Factor 50 Altruist products have a PPD of 54, which is huge.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's really good. Yeah. So if you can get on with that, it's cheap. It's fairly available. You know, it's available in Britain anyway. I don't know on its availability in different countries, but definitely worth a look.
Okay.
So other brands include Bioderma, La Roche-Posay, Uriage, Rilastil, P20.
Smelly.
Meso Aesthetic. Is it smelly? Is it like alcohol?
It smells of like cupboards.
Cupboards?
No. It smells of like musty. Mm. Yeah, it's got a really unpleasant musty smell. I didn't like it at all.
How?
Such a shame. And it was very thick.
Okay.
I found it a bit thick.
Yeah.
But then I'd been, I think I'd just finished something that was very lovely and lightweight. So I think anything would have felt thick in comparison. But yeah, it had quite an unpleasant smell.
You didn't like it. That's it. That's that, isn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Brand called Mesoesthetic Evie, which does like a mousse. Yeah. That looks kind of fun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bioderma.
Okay, so they're all pretty high.
Yeah, really high. Yeah. I've copied a list of that I got, I basically stole from somebody's blog, a blog called parakeets.com. And she's got a really handy little list of products that have high PPD. So like there's a Uriage product called Barry Sun XP Cream SPF 50. And that has a PPD of 65.
What?
Yeah, and it's €16.90. I don't know what it's like. Yeah, but you know, there are really high PPD products out there, but it's just whether they're wearable at all, you know.
Yeah there is a really good, in fact she's a follower of ours, I know she listens to the podcast, and high PPD, so she rates a lot of sunscreens and red lipsticks. I'm just trying to get her name now, and high PPD rating is really important to her. So because she goes hiking, so she, if it might be a nice idea to point people to her Insta page, because actually she's done quite a lot of research into what her faves are, and lightweightness I think is quite important as isn't it? But yeah,
indeed.
And the Mesoesthetic one, I think I had a tester of it when I went for a facial, and it was lovely.
Oh yeah,
really, really nice.
Oh cool.
I mean, it's pretty,
I bet it's expensive.
I think it probably sells, if you buy it through them, about 60 quid, so it is really expensive.
Jeez Louise.
No, that's only 50 mils.
No thanks. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Cosmetic with a K. Cosmetic account, that's what she's...
Cosmetic account, I know, yeah.
She's lovely, great, isn't she? But yeah, I look to her for a lot of... I mean, she's a lover of Altruist, but I look to her for a lot of high PPD things. Yeah, she's got La Roche-Posay here. She's got the Cosmolan. Mm. No, it's not called Cosmolan, Mesoesthetic. She's reviewed. Yeah. So, her name is Cosmetic Account.
Cosmetic with a K. Yeah.
And a K at the end, Cosmetic Account. She's brill. She's done a lot.
We'll link her in the blog post that we're going to do. We'll put all these products in the blog post, because it's a bit... There's a big old list of brand names, and quite a lot of them I haven't tried, I've got to be honest.
Same.
I found La Roche-Posay used to give me zits.
Did it really?
When I used it, it made me spotty. But maybe I'll try it again. I can't remember it feeling thick. I just remember
it's
the spots.
It's so highly rated. I remember I asked people on my Insta, you know, what do you recommend? And that was that on Ultraviolet were the highest.
Yeah. Everyone loves it. I need to try it again, because, you know, my acne was so bad that if I got a spot the day after using anything, I never wanted to touch it again.
Yeah, of course.
So
you wouldn't, would you?
Yeah. No.
That's brilliant.
Have I helped? Did I help anybody?
You've helped everybody. You've helped everybody. And I hope we've helped Americans give us some nice reviews.
That basically we haven't helped America very much, because we said that their sunscreen's not very good. But that's not Americans' fault, it's the FDA's fault.
Yeah, that's really tough.
They need to sort out their ideas. They're making life difficult for people.
Yeah, I know. It is really hard, especially if they're going backwards and banning two of the most recently sort of passed ingredients. That sucks. We have to go because we're on Zoom and we're running out of time.
We're having a mare today.
We've been doing this for 2 hours now. So thank you to Nia for doing so much research. Thank you to people who listen to us. Thank you to people who review us. We're so grateful. We've been doing this for like 4 years now.
We love people who review us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicely, though. When you write nice things, I don't want to know anything nasty.
I mean,
that would make me sad.
Some people, you can't change some people and you can't make everyone like you, you know?
No, I don't expect everyone to like me. I just expect the people who don't like me to leave me alone.
Some people just want to talk shit.
Yeah.
You just have to let them. It's mad, isn't it, with the advent of technology? We behave really badly as people. We do things behind screens that we would never, ever say to somebody's face. And I just really think we've got to relearn not to be pricks.
I really, I don't think I'm a prick. I can't imagine being a prick to anyone.
Not a prick.
Even a complete stranger.
You know what? Even if I've had like the worst service in a place, I would always take it up there and then. I would never in a trillion years write a bad review. No, I wouldn't.
I would thank them and give them a tip, even if it was awful.
I'd stopped doing that. And, you know, from someone who was in the business, I think it is actually important to just go, you know what, that was a bit shit.
Crummy.
But I just think businesses are trying so hard to survive. Why help them? In fact, did you hear this amazing news story? We're going to finish on this. About there's a restaurant in Cardiff with it's a Michelin starred chef.
Yeah. About that Lee something or
he's
other.
Got a lovely Cora, I think the name of his restaurant. Tiny little restaurant in Cardiff in basically a house, which got about 6 tables. And it was hired, I think. Was it hired by a law firm?
Some rich
and they were
assholes.
Just horrible to the front of house lady. And in the end, he was just going to kick them out. And they were just horrendous. In the end, he's going to kick them out and make them not pay. I was like, you what, mate? You'd be fucking paying. Sorry. Anyway, he did make them pay. And then he gave the whole proceeds to the poor waitress who'd had to deal with the shitty behaviour. And I think the law firm even got in touch and said, please, can you help us identify who it was and we'll take it up? So I hope something comes in. Because
that's good.
Don't be shit this day and age. It's horrid.
No.
There's no point.
Absolutely not.
People are having people are having a hard time. Just don't be a prick to people.
It's a hard time. It is. Yeah.
It's a rough time in the world. And actually in the restaurant business, there's just no staff. People do not have the staff. They are just leaving in droves to go work in offices and do something more pleasant, which is a real shame. But there we go. Off topic. Let's do a fun episode next.
I really want to do a fun episode.
Yeah.
I'm collecting stupid, funny Instagram and Facebook
I've been
and
really
Reddit
lazy
posts.
On that. I'm going to, it's because you live in Reddit.
Get
that's why
on
I see
it.
You find more.
I see. I love it. I love nonsense.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do a nonsense post. We'll do a nonsense episode again.
Yes.
And I love doing Q&As with listeners as well. I really like that. Answering people's questions. Okay.
So fun episode next time. Mm-hmm. Find us on Instagram, review us kindly, and you'll hear from us soon.
Soon. You'll be hearing from us.
You'll be hearing from us. Let's put it that way.
Let's just end it there. All right. Thanks, love you.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.